Hey, grab your note sheet. Good to have you here. Hey, we started out the year in this series, Best Year Ever. Looking at 2019, how could it be catalytic in our personal lives? How could it be catalytic in our community lives, our families, even our church? There's some things we're hoping for. As nice as it is to be in these comfortable seats, someday we want to get a building. We want to do a bunch of cool stuff with our kids. So as a church and our families, how is it going to be catalytic for 2019? You have a great year this year, and it can change everything for years to come. Now, we're starting a series today, and it's going to be about relationships, because if you have tons and tons of conflict in your relationships in 2019, your chances of having the best year ever are going to be quite slim. Relationships, so my life goes, so my relationship goes. My relationships are great. I have a great year. And today our topic is conflict. Now, in your note sheet at the very top, here's our theme. Your best year ever will greatly depend on the quality and health of your relationships. And today we're going to talk about conflict. So jump right in. The big idea, what's causing the quarrels and fights among you? Give it a moment just to sink in. What is it that's causing fights and quarrels among you in your families, your relationships? We'll kind of lean into marriage today, but conflict is in all relationships. Put humans together and there is potential conflict. Now we're going to take a look at a letter that someone wrote that ended up in the Bible. You might know that Jesus came from a large family, had lots of brothers and sisters and a mom and dad, and so he really understood conflict. And his brother, one of his brothers' name was James, and he wrote something about conflict. I think he must have learned it from Jesus. They put it in the Bible, so I'm going to read it to you. It's in your notes. What's causing the quarrels and fights among you? Don't they come from the evil desires that war within you? You want what you don't have, so you scheme and kill to get it. You're jealous of what others have, but you can't get it, so you fight and wage war to take it away from them. Yet you don't have what you want because you don't ask God for it. And even when you ask, you don't get it because your motives are all wrong. You only want what will give you pleasure. So we're going to jump right in, kind of put some context to it. The first thing, right in your notes, what inside conflict is causing outside conflict? So he asks the question, and he has these two little phrases. He says, you know, what's causing the fights among you? Isn't it what's going on within you? Now, here's my problem, and maybe you can relate to this. When I'm in conflict, it's sort of natural for me to sort of see what's going on among me and start to point fingers and decide, you know, it's not my fault, it's other people's fault. It doesn't have anything to do with me. In fact, my wife has this great phrase that she'll use sometimes because I can be a finger pointer. She'll say, every time you're pointing a finger, there's one finger going out and there's three fingers. Wow, that's about how big she says it to me right there, too. Right there. I mean, there's one, you know, it's like I got one finger going out this, but there's, and that's probably not a bad ratio. There probably is something happening out here among me that's causing some conflicts, but there's probably three issues inside me that's being triggered. Who are you in conflict with right now? And that's your focus. It's so easy to point the finger and it's probably easy to answer that question. Well, you know, they said they were going to be on time and they weren't. Or she said that we were never going to do that again. Or I can't get these kids to mind. Or, you know, he spent too much money again. Or, you know, whatever. And it's just, it's the things out here. Instead of stopping just for a moment and asking myself the question, what's going on inside me right now? What buttons are being pushed? What's being triggered inside me? The starting place, best year ever, the starting place to understand is that it begins with me. In fact, it might even be true that the conflicts that happen in my life and it ignites something inside me, and it's kind of God's way of revealing something that he can heal and deal with. Because if I'm always fixing everything around me, nothing changes in me, and I take me wherever I go. I can change the circumstances, but if I'm there. So that's the very first thing to think about. What inside conflict is changing my outside conflict? Before I point the finger, to just stop for a moment and just say, what's happening inside me right now? What's going on in me? Okay, number two, write in your notes. What am I demanding but not getting my way? This is a good one. So parents will know this, and I remember this from when we raised our sons when they were little. When babies are little, and parents know this, you got to sort of figure out their cry. Because, you know, babies have different types of cries. I mean, you know, they have their, I'm scared, and so they cry. You know, you recognize when they're crying because they're afraid of something. And then you recognize when they're hurt. You know, a baby gets hurt, you know, physically they fall down or something happens and you hear them crying. You're like, oh, I know that cry. That's a cry when they're hurt. And then they have their most passionate cry when they want to get their way. I mean, that's the passion, and that's the one that really tugs your heart on. You put them to bed at night, and they don't want to be in their bed, and they sob and cry and scream and yell, and there's tears everywhere, and it's just like going crazy, and it's so hard to ignore it, because the most passionate cry is, I want my way. And it's difficult with babies, you know, because you can't give them their way all the time, because you train them, all they have to do is cry, and then you get adults that whenever they don't get their way, they cry. And everybody around them has to try to make sure they have their way. What's happening in your life right now and you're demanding your way to get it? You just feel like, you know, it's not going to be right unless it's done my way. We're not going to be able to reconcile this conflict until you see it my way. Even in this part, it says that they'll wage war to get it. And I think it's not like we've, you know, start a war with guns. But I do think we all have our own weapons. And the more we use our weapons in our relationships when we're in conflict, the more proficient we become at using our weapons. It is kind of like a war. Some people's weapons are they get super loud and they yell and they're intimidating and they scream. And, you know, the way they demand their way is they make it miserable and they scare everybody. Do you know anybody like that? No elbowing allowed in the room. Or how about this? This is a great one right here, the silent treatment. That's a super good weapon in war. You know, this happens in marriages all the time. There's usually one silent person, you know, and they're not talking, you know, and, you know, you come out into the living room and you're like aware that, you know, something's wrong because the temperature's like minus 30. You know, you come out and you're like, hey, is everything okay? And, you know, is everything all right? And they just sort of give you, it's fine. You know, two cold shoulders. And some people get so good at it, they can maintain it for days and days. Sleep in the other room. 35 years I'll be married in June. So it's a long time to put up with me. So when you see my wife today, give her a thumbs up. Bit of advice. If you have an extra bedroom, don't ever go sleep in there. Don't create that type of distance. If you have to, sleep on the floor right next to the bed. Say, I'm so pissed off at you. I mean, mad. Sorry. I'm so mad at you, I can't even get in this bed with you. Don't go in the other bedroom, though. Don't make it that silent, create that much distance between you. It's not going to kill you to sleep on the floor. What will probably happen is it'll be uncomfortable and you'll get back in the bed. You may be hanging right on the edge of the bed with one leg over. What type of weapons are you using, and would you be willing to surrender them? Because could it be that you're just demanding your own way? And like a little tiny baby, maybe even God has set it up to teach you not to cry, and you're not always going to get your own way, so he's making sure that you don't get your way. Like at some point, parents understand, I cannot give them their own way. They're going to be asking me for the keys to the car when they're like 11. And they're going to cry. Parents understand, let them cry. Sometimes. Because you can't always get your own way. Now, the third thing is right in your notes, how am I praying about the conflict? And so this is good now. So, you know, obviously, you know, James grows up with his brother Jesus, which, you know, must have been quite a thing. I mean, I don't know if you have a brother that's a little difficult. You know, or maybe, but can you imagine growing up with a brother that said he was God? That couldn't have been very easy. You know, you go to school, he's like, you're crackpot brother again, you know. So, I mean, you know, Jesus had a real family and they went through real conflicts. And, You can grab one of the free Bibles at the free table and just read one of the stories, just a couple paragraphs about his family and his conflict. You know, they had to learn to go through it. And one of the things that James says is that we forgot to pray. And I understand the problem. When I'm in conflict with somebody, I'm not normally thinking about praying. Murder, yes. Prayer, not. You know, it just doesn't come to my mind naturally. Oh, I should pray for that person. I don't know how you pray for somebody when you have their hands around their neck. I mean, that's a little difficult to... But it happens that in those moments when you're in super, super conflict, sometimes the only person that can settle me down is God. Nobody else can. I'm so angry, I'm so demanding, I'm so stuck in my own stuff. The only person that can settle me down is Jesus. I've been there many, 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 many times. Now, when you start to think about this idea of praying and what does God say about prayers? This isn't your notes, but you can just jot it down. So there's kind of four different ways God will approach prayers, or here's how he answered prayers. The first thing is God sometimes is going to say yes, oh, happy day. You know, God, can I have this? Can you do this? And God says yes. You're like, woohoo, you know, that's awesome. And then there's those times that God says no. Like every good parent, God says no. And I never understand, I don't like it when God says no. Now, sometimes when God has told me no, like years later in hindsight, I'm glad he said no. Like you may be in this room right here now today, and you prayed for somebody, like to be your boyfriend or your girlfriend. You prayed and prayed and prayed, and God didn't give them to you. And then like you saw them like 10 years later in the grocery store, and you're like, thank you for not answering that prayer. You know, he says, like, it happens. Thank you for not giving me that job. You know, if you're a parent here, I mean, we all understand it sometimes knows the right answer. And now, here's the next one, not yet. So sometimes God has it on its way, but he's waiting for different things, and he says, it's, you know, be patient, be waiting. And then here's the last one, and I find in conflicts, this is often how God will reach for me. He'll give me my next right step. Because sometimes I'm not sure what to do. And the other person can misinterpret that, or, you know, I can be presumptuous, or, you know, I God, what is the next thing I should do in this conflict that I'm in? That's a prayer that we all can pray with your spouse, with a family member, you know, with a friend, someone at work. Like you can say this prayer. You can just say, God, what, you know, what's the next thing I should do? And he'll show you your next step. I'm going to read you something out of this book. You'll notice in your note sheet at the bottom, there's some resources, and one of them is this book, Peacemaker. And there's a story in there I thought was pretty good. So check this out. Now, this is a family that's they lost their dad and they just lost their mother. They have this huge farm and everybody's moved out except for this one brother. And he's balking at the sale of the farm because he lived on the farm. He has a special need issue, true story. And the last 10 years, he took care of his mom. And now everybody wants to sell the farm. And, hey, you can find some place to live. And so they're trying to get him out of there because they've got some people coming to see the property. Now, imagine this conflict. Here's how it starts. Don't try to come in, Frank yelled through the door. I have a bat, and I'll hit anyone that comes in. A little conflict going on there. Come on, open the door, Frank, Joe responded from the porch. We just want to talk. This is getting out of control, Jenny said as she pulled Joe's arm. I think we better talk with someone. So the family sort of huddles up and, you know, he stays in the house. And then actually end up, Jenny goes to a church and she talks to the pastor and he sits with them and he starts to talk with them about praying. Like, how could God show us a next step here? So let me read you a little snippet of it. He's saying to him, he says, let me put it another way. What is important to you, he's talking to the children in this situation, to get your money as soon as possible, as most people would, or to demonstrate how much Jesus loves your brother? One brother says, I can see myself, oh, I see. You want us to be good little Christians who give in to everybody else and give them their way. And here's what he says. If you really want to know what to do, pastor talking, why don't we set aside some time to pray and ask God what would be the best and the next right thing to do to resolve this conflict? So you have the backdrop now, okay? So they spend a little time praying. Let me tell you what happens. This takes a second to read, but it's really cool. Okay, here it is right here. So they get together at this dinner. There's a banquet. They get Frank to come. All right, here it is. The eldest son, Joe, asks for everyone's attention. Frank, our family has gathered together today to honor you. For the past 10 years, you devoted yourself to caring for Mom. Today, we want to present you with a special plaque. It says, to our brother Frank, the best of all sons, who cared for our mother and loved her with undying devotion. Your companionship filled her life with joy and delight and was a constant reminder to her of the love of God. With deepest gratitude to a wonderful brother from Joe, John, Jenny, and Matt. So remember now, we go from the porch with a bat, take some time to pray, next right step, read a little more. Tears welled up in Frank's eyes as Joe's handed him the plaque. Before he could speak, Joe handed him an envelope. Frankie went on, in appreciation for all you did for Mom, we want to give you this gift. It's an agreement we've all signed that gives you a life estate to the farmhouse. That means you'll be able to stay there as long as you live. We found a buyer who's willing to purchase the rest of the farmland. Ownership of the house will eventually pass to our children. But as long as you want to live there, we want you to know that that's your home. As Frank clutched the envelope, the dam of emotions finally burst. Months of uncertainty finally gave way to sobs of relief and gratitude as Joe leaned over and hugged his brother for the first time in years. Joe's teenage son leaned towards his sister and whispered, "Maybe there is a God after all. Because there's no way Dad would have done that on his own." What do you need to pray about? It's so locked up. You're not going to think your way out of it. So here's the good news. God can give you your next right step. And he can change your heart to take it. Who are you in conflict with? And what do you need to pray? Now look at some practical things. Flip your outline over and just real quick, we'll go through some stuff. Practical ideas on how to handle conflict. So in that backdrop, okay, some practical stuff. Here it is right here. Number one, understand many conflicts are perpetual. See if you can spell perpetual. John Gotham, it's also a book at the bottom there, is a researcher on marriage. He's conducted a tremendous amount of interviews and written some books on marriage. And here's what he's decided by his research, that 70% of the conflicts in marriage are perpetual. They're going to happen time and time again because people are hardwired. So 70%, get this now, 70% of the conflicts that we have in marriages, boyfriend and girlfriend, that type of stuff, happen because we're different and we're hardwired. So for instance, we all know this. This happens in marriage a lot of times. Maybe you've seen this before. One person will be a spender and they marry a saver. And so the spender, you know, they're wanting to spend all the money all the time, which causes conflicts. I mean, they come home with the brochures and they've done the research. We're going to go on this really super great vacation. I've got it all planned out. You know, we're going to go on vacation. And the other person's like, no, we're not. You're going to bankrupt us. You're spending all the money. And the other person's like, are you crazy? That's why I work. I work so I can spend the money. I don't. I work so I can save the money and put it in the bank. That'll cause a conflict. Perpetual conflicts. 70%. Hardwired, and it's always going to be that way. There's always going to be conflicts. Now, here's some homework for you in your relationships. Write the first one down. Identify these in your relationship. So the first thing is just figure out, well, how you're wired a certain way, I'm wired a certain way. Clarice and I have, you know, we have completely different approaches to so many different things, you know, in life and in marriage. And let me, here's an example. So we've had to identify ours. Here's an example of how conflicts can happen. Like we go into the night, we're going to spend a night watching a movie together. What could be more simple? You know, we're going to watch TV together and watch a movie together, you know, and we're going to spend the night watching a movie together. Now here's the problem. Here's hardwired differences. Like you go onto Netflix and it says recommendations for Clarice and you're going to see Parenthood, you know, P.S. I Love You. Here's one I wrote down. Downton Abbey. Marie Kondo. What kind of a freak? I mean, all she does... You just, like, you watch her fold stuff. You know, does it bring you joy? Like, changing the channel brings me joy. I mean... You know, like, how many times, here's the big joke, I mean, you go to Clarice's things, how many times can a person watch the Gilmore Girls? It's like on and on and on. You know, now for me, yeah, I don't even answer that, girls. You know, don't even, like, you know. Now my Netflix, Avengers, Black Panther, I like Mission Impossible. You know, do you see potential conflict? Trying to pick a movie? Has it ever turned into, has Clarice ever stormed off and said, I'm going to bed, you're taking too long? Yes. Just trying to watch a movie. Identify the areas in your life. What's happening in your marriage? 70% of the conflict that's happening is because you're wired differently. And then the second thing is write this, decide what you can live with. Okay, so here's a big one in our marriage. Clarice loves Chinese food. She loves it. She loves it gourmet Chinese food. She loves it 6 days old from Smith's. I mean, she just loves Chinese food. I don't even refer to it as food. I hate Chinese food. I don't like Chinese food. Anybody that eats with a couple pairs of sticks is out. I don't like it. I don't want to be in a Chinese restaurant. I mean, they give you a cookie, like, that's not a cookie. There's no chocolate in it. I mean, I don't like anything about it. I don't like Chinese food. I don't want Chinese food. We understand that of ourselves. We don't go out on a date night for Chinese food. We also don't go to Maverick and have Bahama Hamas, where it's my favorite. We've had to figure out a way to compromise. See, we've identified we're really different when it comes to like what we like to eat. And so we've had to figure out, like, how, like, what can we live with? And what can we cut? Do you know that when you compromise in your relationship, it's a form of serving? This is going to make you laugh, but one of the ways Clarice serves me, she does not drag me to Chinese. And I'm grateful. And one of the ways I serve her is that from time to time we go to Japanese, which is a compromise for me. Finding out the areas that you are hardwired to be different in, because there'll be perpetual conflict, and then deciding, what can I live with? Okay, 70% of the conflicts. Now, secondly, and this is important because there's 30% of the conflicts that aren't like that. What do we do with those? And write in your notes, repair the conflict with forgiveness. This is Jesus talking to someone that came and asked him about this whole issue of conflicts. Talking about forgiveness, one of his friends, his name was Peter, says, how many times should I forgive someone who does something wrong to me? Is seven times enough? Jesus replied, seven? Hardly. Try seven times 70. It's almost like Jesus is saying, seven times? Are you crazy? You think you're going to have a friendship or a relationship, someone with work or be married, and you're only going to have to forgive them seven times? A week? Talking about your marriage, not mine. But just think about it. That's really what he's saying to me. He's saying, Peter, come on. He goes, that's not how relationships work. You'll always need to forgive. Somebody will always say something stupid. Someone will always forget something. Now, I want to make sure you understand, I'm not talking about huge issues today because they're out there. I'm not talking about adultery. I'm not talking about abuse. That'll be for another time. I'm just talking about the things that are a little beyond annoying. Like the first 70% are just annoying. And just understand, 70% of your marriage is going to be filled with annoyance. Oh, happy day. But 30% goes past that. And it sticks to us. I've got a little way I'm going to show it right here. This is what I mean by it. Okay. So this candle here, which is an example today of my wife and I, because it never occurs to me to tell her that I'm using her good candle. Until she came out and saw me using it. She's like, "You're using my good candles." I'm like, "There's good and bad candles?" I didn't even know that. But anyways, this is her good candle. Okay, now here's what I'm trying to show you right here. The 30%, okay, the 30%. These are the things that if we don't forgive each other, they hurt. And they create distance, okay? Now this flame right here, you think about this flame, it's not that big. It's not ginormous, right? But I'm not going to just put my hand over it like that very long, because that's hot. And so with this flame, I'll sort of keep my distance from it. It's not ginormous. It's not going to burn this place down, you know, unless it got knocked over. But I mean, like but you can't get too close to it because it is too. I'm talking about these type of things that get said in a relationship with a brother or a sister that we can hang on to, and they create distance. Hurt creates distance unless it's forgiven. Even this type of hurt, I'll keep my distance. And what forgiveness does is just coming out and putting it out. So now there's no need for distance. So, who do you need to forgive? Now, why is forgiveness important? Let's talk through it and then we'll be on our way. Put in your notes there, take turns talking and listening. Okay, now, I want to say this. Until the candle goes out, it's really hard to talk and listen because I'm hurt and I want to keep my distance from you. So I say things to keep my distance from you and I don't listen to you. But once I've been forgiven, a lot of people end up fighting even more because they try to talk it out before they've forgiven each other. They've got the candle going and there's hurt there still and it's too difficult to talk and listen. And sometimes they'll beat themselves up and say they're bad communicators and he won't listen and she doesn't know how to talk to me. And the truth is, they just haven't forgiven each other first. Because once you have been forgiven and the flame is gone, then you can talk. Who do you need to forgive? And they did it. They're guilty. They lit that candle. Who do you need to forgive? Who would you wish you could have a conversation with? You never can. Forgive them first. Sorry. Now talking and listening. Let's write three things down. Number one, some ideas on how to do it this week. What are you concerned about? So you just ask that question. You've forgiven them and you just ask this question. You just put it out on the table and then you take turns talking and listening. What are you concerned about? That allows you to talk about your life. Or, I'm concerned about the kids. They look like they're on their way to prison. Or I don't know. It's just like, you know, I'm concerned about the finances. Or, you know, my parents are coming in a month. And last time you and my dad, you know, nearly got in a fight with your fists. And so like, I'm concerned, you know, like what am I concerned about that's going on right now in my life? Talking. And listening. Okay? Number two, what do you wish could happen? And that's the future. That's just asking someone, just like, say, what do you want to see happen with our finances? You know, like, what do you want to see happen in with the way we remodel the house? You know, what do you wish for? When's the last time you sat down with your spouse, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, whatever it is? And you just sat down and the candle was out and you just were able to sit there and just talk and listen and say, what do you wish would happen in our relationship? What do you want to see happen? And then the last one, and write it in your notes. What can I do to help? What can I do to help? That's saying I'm willing to support. And that's not always the easiest one. What can I do to help? It's just a question to throw out there. One of the things we're noticing at Eastlake Church is that we're noticing that the children and the different kids in our community and kids that come to church here don't have their walls up as much when it comes to going to church or bringing kids to church or even being open to the Jesus story. I don't know what it is. The older we get and we go through religious things and stuff, the walls come up. It's very difficult to approach people and say, hey, would you like to come to church or, you know, or even show anything to anybody? But here's what we're finding out. Kids, no walls. They're willing to hear about the story. They're willing to invite people. So one of the things we're trying to do this year, 2019, like what can we do to help to do that, is we want to, like, we're pouring tons of resources and leadership and stuff into our kids programs. So, you know, trying to reach it, okay, because we're noticing they're super, super open. Even today, there should be a slide come up. There's going to be a meeting across the hall, just 15 minutes, super, super fast. And they're basically just going to talk about, you know, well, how would we put programs together so it'd be like the best hour of their week and how would you reach them, that type of thing. You might be shaking your head right now. I know kids. I hate them. I never work with them. But I'm just trying to say something to you. Like, their hearts are open. And if you're thinking about it, they'll work with you and get you on board. So, you know, just a sort of an idea on what can I do to help. But in your relationships, asking that question, what can I do to help? Now here's the last thing in writing your notes, the bottom line. As we resolve our conflicts, we grow closer. The Bible says, someone wrote this and I thought it was pretty good. It's in the Bible. Put up with one another, forgive one another. If you're holding something against someone, forgive. Just as the Lord forgave you. And over all these things, put on love. Love holds them all together perfectly, as they were one. Last thing I want to say before we put some music on to process. One thing I've noticed in my life is that when I'm not able to forgive someone, it's normally because I'm not feeling forgiven. And you may be here today and you might be stuck and this was you saw this and you're thinking, I'd like to do that, but then immediately the blocks happen. You know, could it be like what this says, forgive because you've been forgiven? I have noted that when I can't forgive, it's normally because I haven't gone to God and asked Him to forgive me. And then once He fills me with forgiveness, which feels awesome, it's free. You have to earn it. You have to ask for it. Once He's filled me with forgiveness, there's forgiveness in me to give. So who do you need to forgive?